This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, June 4th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll get the latest COVID update from state health officials. Millions of people are headed to public lands again this year to recreate in various ways. And the Forest Service is stressing its motto, "Know before you go." More on that story coming up. And it's the first Friday of the month, and that means a new edition of Nature Almanac. We'll hear from the most raucous of Colorado's June songbirds. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, we'll start with the headlines. Late last night, Colorado's House Judiciary Committee narrowly advanced a policing reform bill. SB 273 would limit what constitutes an arrestable offense to certain felonies, violent crimes, and victims' rights offenses. Proponents say limiting traffic violations, municipal offenses, and misdemeanors to ticketable offenses will limit fatal encounters with the police and keep nonviolent offenders out of pretrial detention. The bill has encountered strong opposition from the bail bonds industry. SB 273 passed the state Senate last week and is expected to head to a floor vote Saturday or Monday. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has updated its definition of a COVID outbreak and announced three outbreaks on Thursday. Meanwhile, 95% of the COVID patients in Colorado who have been hospitalized since February have one thing in common. They are unvaccinated. About 500 people remain hospitalized in Colorado, according to state officials. The Associated Press reports that after more than a year of dealing with the pandemic, the near-constant churn of unvaccinated patients is wearing on frontline doctors and nurses. And their frustration arises in part because at least some of the cases may have been avoidable. We'll have more on the state of the pandemic and hear the voices of frontline responders later in the broadcast. If you're still looking for a Pfizer vaccine for yourself or your now eligible children, the City of Boulder, in partnership with the state's COVID-19 Vaccine for All mobile vaccination clinic program, is offering a series of free walk-up vaccine clinics this month. The clinics are 100% free and no insurance, ID, or pre-registration is required. The next clinics will be held Sunday, June 6th, and Sunday, June 13th. On those days, morning clinics will take place at Crestview Elementary School, located at 1897 Sumac Avenue, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Afternoon clinics will be held at Orchard Grove Mobile Home Park, located at 3003 Valmont Road, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Currently, Pfizer is the only vaccine available to people aged 12 to 17. Employees at JBS USA Incorporated's Greeley Beef Processing Plant were back to normal working hours Thursday after missing shifts this week because of a cyber attack. The plant's union, the United Food and Commercial Workers International, could not say whether the same will be the case today. JBS, which owns Greeley-based Pilgrim's Pride Corporation, was hit on Sunday with a cyber attack that brought operations at its slaughterhouses to a standstill and threatened the global beef supply, which had already seen prices rise in recent weeks. If you're headed to Rocky Mountain National Park this weekend, be advised that the required time entry reservations enacted due to the pandemic last year are required again this season. KGNU's Steve Miller says lines of traffic have been long this week, and guards report hostile reactions from visitors.
This past Memorial Day weekend at the Rocky Mountain National Park saw thousands of visitors arrive at the Beaver Meadows entrance station, only to be turned away if they hadn't made the required online reservation. The Denver Post reports that for the second year in a row, the Rocky Mountain National Park's timed entry reservation system went into effect. This forced park employees to turn away people who had waited an hour in line in a bumper-to-bumper backup. One guard predicted that they were going to be yelled at nonstop all summer, and she had already seen a number of upset visitors. Adding to the confusion was the one electronic road sign apparently intended to warn visitors. The sign confused people who had not gone on the park's website prior to their visit. Some visitors said they thought erroneously that their season passes were permits. Visit the Rocky Mountain National Park website to make a time entry reservation. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
If you live in Denver's area of Hampton and Colorado Boulevard, two new underpasses will be open today along the High Line Canal Trail. The underpasses allow people to travel underneath sections of the busy highways instead of crossing them, reducing potential conflicts with people in cars and aligning with Denver's Vision Zero program to eliminate serious and fatal injury crashes. Also new is 1,400 feet of multi-use trail along the north side of Hampton Avenue. A study conducted in 2014 helped spur the underpass project. The study noted five crashes involving people walking and biking between 2008 and 2012, and approximately 75,000 people in cars using the Hampton, Colorado intersection daily. The Denver Public Schools Board of Education confirmed the appointment of Dr. Alex Marrero as the district's new superintendent Thursday. In a 9-to-1 vote, the board made the appointment effective July 6th. He will earn $26,000 a year as superintendent and would be eligible for raises every August 1st. The 38-year-old Marrero comes to Denver from New Rochelle, New York. 2 days after announcing he was the finalist, Marrero was sued, along with other district members, by the former medical director of his former New York district. She alleged she was left out of key COVID-19 response discussions and retaliated against for raising concerns. St. Vrain families are invited to a virtual town hall and panel discussion next week centered on the experiences of the district students of color and their families. The discussion, organized by the NAACP Boulder County chapter, Showing Up for Racial Justice, Families of Boulder County, and YWCA Boulder County, is in response to a racist incident at Meade High School. Three Meade students posed for a photo on social media last month that appears to show the students reenacting the murder of George Floyd. The Solidarity to Safety, Race and Belonging in SVVSD Town Hall is from 6 to 7:30 p.m. June 10th. Another day in the 80s is the forecast for the Friday Colorado Front Range. The high temperature will be approaching 90 today and tomorrow with around 60 degrees, 82 for Sunday. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 64 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. State health authorities brought an upbeat tone and positive graphs with them to their latest media update on the COVID-19 pandemic.
We are seeing cases go down amongst all age groups, and you can see how precipitously those cases continue to drop across the state.
That's Scott Bookman, COVID incident commander of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, CDPHE. He says hospitalizations for COVID cases in Colorado have dropped below 500, and that this is evidence that vaccines are safe and effective. As case numbers drop and vaccination rates increase, federal masking guidance has changed, but it doesn't always coincide with state and local recommendations. Bookman admits it can be confusing, so clarified the state's position.
The face covering requirements start at age 12 for those who are vaccine eligible, and we really want to ensure that those who are not vaccinated continue to wear their masks in public settings. For those who are fully vaccinated, they do not need to wear a mask in most settings other than, in limited healthcare environments. But we really do want to encourage all Coloradans to wear, to have a mask with them at all times so that they can put it on and be respectful if they go into a business that is still requiring a mask.
CDPHE Immunization Branch Chief Heather Roth says vaccine uptake in Colorado has been relatively high, with hesitancy coming down more to reasonable doubts than to outright refusal.
The number and the percentage of true, vaccine refusers, even in Colorado, where we have kind of a liberal leaning in terms of vaccine acceptance, is pretty small. So our efforts are really focused on this middle ground, right? These people who have concerns and are hesitant about the vaccine, but can be convinced by people they trust, including their healthcare providers. So one thing we are doing is partnering with primary healthcare providers giving them the tools and resources to have these conversations, these one-on-one conversations with patients who just, they have questions and they have valid questions, and they just need some answers to make an informed decision.
According to updated CDPHE data, more than 3 million people in Colorado have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Boulder County's most recent numbers show 73% of those eligible for a vaccine have gotten at least a partial course. The city of Boulder hosted a free vaccine clinic downtown yesterday, no ID or insurance required, to administer the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. On the 6th and the 13th of this month, the city will hold two more free vaccine clinics to administer the Pfizer vaccine, which is approved for people as young as 12. The CDPHE's Scott Bookman says the state is investing effort to make vaccination as easy as possible because it's the surest way to get back to normal.
At this point, the continued most important thing in ending this pandemic is our vaccination rates and getting as many Coloradans vaccinated as quickly as possible. There is enough vaccine out there at this point for all Coloradans to have it. We are doing all that we can to ensure that it is accessible to people, bringing it to their neighborhoods, bringing it to community-based organizations, working with all different types of providers to ensure that this vaccine is accessible, and really starting to have conversations on an individual level to convince Coloradans who are hesitant or who are struggling to get this vaccine to help them get it done. That is the single biggest thing that we can do to end this pandemic.
The state of Colorado is offering incentives to get vaccinated in the form of a lottery-type drawing. The winner of the first Colorado Comeback Cash Sweepstakes will be announced later today. As Coloradans step into the light at the end of the tunnel, some frontline first responders are both starting to let out a sigh of relief and processing the intensity of the last 15 months. CU Environmental Studies student Michael Kane produced this story as part of the Brink series, a KGNU collaboration with CU students.
It can be difficult to remember the beginning of this pandemic amidst the constant tide of events that have occurred between then and now. But for one group of frontline responders, those memories are still vivid.
I was there like right when the lockdown started happening. And at work, it was things definitely switched gears.
That was Noah Zicklin, an EMT in Boulder, Colorado. Noah, like so many other young men and women in the 200-plus ground ambulance services here in Colorado, got to experience that gear shift in real time. Denver EMT Maggie Mueller describes the scramble to get the latest medical information.
That we were getting, just constantly getting emails and messages about all of the updates, and it felt like everything changed every day. Like, okay, well, everyone doesn't need to wear their mask right away. Okay. Everybody does need to wear a mask. And now it was a lot of rules and mandates changes.
Masks were mandated on every call, and we started dealing with PPE and just figuring out how much PPE we had. We've used PPE in the past on certain calls, with other airborne illnesses and diseases. But obviously this was a whole new ball game.
Both Maggie and Noah have responded to COVID-positive cases.
Definitely, the amount of COVID patients we've had has decreased significantly since, at least from calls that I've been on. But at the beginning and throughout that whole summer last year, we dealt with a lot of COVID patients.
I've had several and considering it's probably been like 20% of my calls.
Responding to these cases is far from a simple task. Noah walked me through a typical response.
We'd get dispatched to the call with at least one fire engine and then our ambulance. And what we would do is we would have either the EMT or paramedic get fully gowned up in all PPE. And then one firefighter would gown up in all PPE. And they would be the only two to enter the house. Preferably we would ask, our dispatch to ask if the patient or the party could come outside to the ambulance. So we're not having to go in there. But most of the time we would have a firefighter and then the paramedic or EMT, gown up in PPE and go inside and do an initial assessment, see what's going on. And then we kind of move on from there. If we needed more people in there, more people would gown up, or if they were able to handle it, they'd bring them outside in the back of the ambulance, and we just try and limit as many contacts with other people as we could.
Despite these protective measures, stress is ever present.
Because you still have to like move around the patient. But then it's this like kind of, you know, stressful situation. And whenever they cough all the time and just trying to remember like, okay, I'm still here to take care of somebody to the best of my ability and try to make their life a little bit better because they're clearly having one of their worst days. And even though I'm afraid of what this could have, of what could happen, you know, if something goes wrong in the way I put my PPE on or off, or if I, you know, don't sanitize something properly, I had to trust in, we all had to trust in the knowledge in the medicine, the medical advice that we had.
That stress and discomfort is something EMTs face even when not responding to cases.
We all, you know, all had to wear masks in the ambulances. So when we're doing, you know, our 12-hour shifts, and it's hard to keep the masks on and just all of the whole, you know, COVID precautions, we all kind of knew we were dealing with, we all knew we were dealing with COVID patients. So making sure that we were protecting our other, you know, coworkers so there wasn't a massive outbreak, you know, at work, which would have been awful if all the EMTs and paramedics in city of Boulder and, you know, Western Boulder County got COVID.
But not every EMT crew has been so lucky.
Now, honestly, most of us, I had it, you know, so everybody got it at some point and then they're like, okay.
In the months since the initial pandemic, lockdowns, social distancing, and tireless work from medical professionals have brought the inferno down to a managed fire. However, like any fire, COVID is always looking for a chance to spread.
We could kind of tell, you know, if we were, you know, if we were going responding to more calls where, not necessarily like calls at, you know, people's houses, but calls in public where there's been either, you know, multiple patients or stuff like that, where we even just see, because we post throughout the city. So if we, you know, even seeing just groups of people, you know, we could kind of tell the fluctuation of when there's going to be a spike or not.
When I asked Noah if seeing groups of people without masks caused unease, even in 2021, his answer was frank.
It is. Seeing a bunch of people like, all right, here you go. In 2 weeks, there's going to be a bunch, so.
The fight against COVID-19 has been an exhausting one. It has proven to be a resilient and stubborn opponent. Like so many medical professionals, EMTs must face this exhausting call while making sacrifices, both professional and personal.
Typically, on an EMT shift, you alternate who takes a call. Generally that'll happen, you know, whoever decides to take the first call, then you just kind of switch back and forth. And so it was always this little bit of stress of like, whose turn is it? And, you know, once I remember, a friend of mine or a partner of mine, had looked at me and was like, it's okay. Like I can take this one. I know that it's almost the holidays. Like my family doesn't live here. And, you know, he took the call because he knew that I wanted to be able to see my family and, like right before Thanksgiving or something like that. And that was really nice of him, but it's a hard balance. It was a hard balance and it still is a hard balance.
There is an end to this fight coming, but the work isn't finished yet. Individual actions such as social distancing, hand washing, masks, and above all, vaccinations are still the best weapons in our arsenal. Those actions are how we will end this pandemic and will let us give back to the first responders still maintaining that hard balance.
That report was produced by CU Environmental Studies student Michael Kane as part of The Brink, a radio storytelling project. For the first day of June, we bring you the Nature Almanac. Today, catbirds and chats are some of Colorado's most raucous June songbirds. Naturalists Steve Jones and Scott Severs hike Skunk Canyon to find these very conversational birds.
It's June. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Steve Jones and Scott Severs.
Well, we've come to the Skunk Canyon drainage, which is at the base of the foothills. So we've come here at dawn because that's when you can get singing of the local males here in early June.
There's so much to eat here. There's the wild plum and the choke cherry and so many nesting niches. So once we get up here a little ways, we'll hear a dozen birds singing from one place. So let's go up there.
Steve, the gray catbird's on top of that.
So let's just listen to the song for a minute. Most of that is coming from one bird. They're not singing jazz. They're singing classical music because each of those phrases is virtually identical every time they sing it. The catbird is singing the phrases in different order, but each short phrase, which is only a second or so long, is the same each time it sings it.
Oh, there it goes.
It just flew down into the shrubbery, and that's where it's going to forage, and it'll place its nest, what, just a few feet off the ground in a shrub?
Most of these birds build their nests in these dense shrubs. Here's the chat, upslope from us about 30 yards. They are a bright yellow, warbler-like bird. He was doing a little aerial flight.
It's a display flight. He was showing off himself so that other males can see him and know that he has this territory. And they're called chats because they sing a chatty song.
I see what might be his mate.
Oh, really?
He went down into the shrub near that honeysuckle bush, and then the mate is another 10 yards up the hill. Now she just flew.
She flew.
Yep, she just flew up into that skunk brush.
So they're in scattered shrubbery here on the hillside, and that's perfect nesting site for them. I hope we get some more sounds because they're really noisy and raucous, and I've led birding trips up here, and people think they're hearing five or six different birds singing, and it's all the chat. It's right in plain sight, about 20 meters up the hillside, right on top of a sumac bush. And then it just flew down. It's hard to describe its song. It was just going chat, 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 chat then, but it also whistled once.
I think the favorite thing about chat songs, to me, is the one where they do the... like somebody whistling for their dog.
Yeah. And then there's a wolf whistle they give, too. There it is down below, Scott, on the bottom of that three-lobed sumac bush. Oh, it is brilliant yellow. And it looks very much like a warbler called the common yellowthroat. And it used to be classified as a warbler, but it's much bigger than the warblers, and its behavior is totally different, and it's a mimic in its singing behavior. And it's been put in a category all by itself, hasn't it?
The last 5 years, it's now in its own genus.
Yeah.
The other really cool thing about this bird is it has little white feathers that form as spectacles around its eyes.
It's interesting to me how birds in different genera with very different behaviors can evolve to have almost the same appearance. It's just a mystery to me. Oh, here's right in front of us. Well, you may have heard three or four distinct different, there's a whistle, sort of a screech, then a twitter. And unlike with a mockingbird, you can listen, you can hear different birds' songs inside the mockingbird song. With the chat, I can't. Can you, Scott?
No, not usually.
They pick up sounds around them, but I think they make them their own.
Yeah.
Steve Jones and Scott Seavers are friends and Boulder naturalists.
This is the Friday Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us here on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young.